Microfinance, small loans made to the poor so they can invest in the tools they need to improve their lives, has been around in different forms for many years. In the 1970s, it was being used on a small scale in several parts of the world. It has since grown into a multi-billion dollar industry. But with few regulations, and in some countries, no regulations at all, some microfinance institutions began charging interest rates as high as 195% a year and employing abusive collections practices against clients unable to pay. In extreme cases, this has led to forced prostitution, child labor, and suicides. Hugh Sinclair is author of Confessions of a Microfinance Heretic, How Microlending Lost Its Way and Betrayed the Poor. In part two of an extended interview, Sinclair says the betrayal began when the focus shifted from economic development for the poor to financial opportunities for the rich.
The profit motive began to infiltrate the sector as profit-motivated investors realized that actually there was vast untapped wealth in the so-called bottom of the pyramid. It's difficult to define this precise moment that it started, but really since 2001, this century, the large Wall Street banks, specialized investment funds, private equity players began to realize that there was untapped profit potential. So you have the large Wall Street players are increasingly active in microfinance now.
As someone who was working on the inside of the microfinance industry, you started revealing some of what was going on. What were the consequences for you when you started blowing the whistle?
Well, when I was working at the microfinance investment fund Triple Jump, I discovered some anomalies which I found were somewhat, unusual. We had invested in the bank of questionable integrity, and we were investing our own money, so that was, if that's what the manager wanted to do, that was their call. But then we started investing other people's money, and we're not 100% transparent with the investments that we were doing. And for me, this crossed a red line, so I confronted the management and was fired. But really, if you look at other whistleblowers, and myself included, it's very common to receive threats, to be at the receiving end of smear campaigns. The sector works as something of a brotherhood, or I describe it in the book as a cult, in that it's very, very reluctant to accept any criticism. And there's a kind of modus operandi. You must work in this way. You must not criticize it. We are the panacea for global poverty. Microfinance is always and everywhere a wonderful thing. We've reached 200 million clients, and we need to reach a billion more. And as long as you play by the rules of the game, it's fine. You can have a nice life and a nice career, and it's fairly well paid. But you must not criticize the sector. When you do criticize it, you start finding increasingly you're at the receiving end of some occasionally pretty aggressive people.
There are some good organizations out there, some good institutions. What's the difference, and what kind of results can they get?
I suppose the key difference between an effective, ethical, and productive microfinance institution that doesn't exploit the poor is that they will not be very profitable. It's much more profitable to bully your non-repaying clients into repayment, and you can get away with it because there's very little regulation. It's much more profitable to charge high interest rates. And the problem that the ethical players increasingly face is that it's increasingly difficult for them to compete for capital, because when they go to the investment funds and they say, we've got a return on equity of 5%, could you invest in our bank and we're having a positive social impact? The investment funds often think, well, hang on, there's another bank in this country that's got a return on equity of 35%. Why don't we invest in that one? So part of the problem is that the interests within the sector are increasingly geared towards profit and return on equity and traditional Wall Street finance measures. And it makes it very difficult for the ethical people to actually play a fair game. And because there's so little transparency in the sector, it's very difficult for a US citizen, for example, to be able to determine the difference between a good and a bad institution in Africa somewhere. Because the microfinance funds and the intermediaries that act as a channel between the US citizen and the ultimate borrowers, they present the information that they want to. And it's almost impossible for a U.S. citizen to be able to determine the good from the bad.
What are some of the things to look out for?
One of the things that people should always have in mind is, what are the actual interest rates that the poor are actually paying? And who calculated those rates? You know, has it actually been verified by an external person that those are the rates? Because there's a lot of deception over interest rates. What are the protection mechanisms for clients? How does the institution ensure that its clients are not, for example, employing children that could otherwise be in school, applying very aggressive debt collection techniques? What actual mechanisms are in place? When, for example, an individual is investing on a lending platform, for example, in the United States, the most popular one is Kiva. What actually is the interest rate that Kiva are charging? If you see, for example, that these platforms are telling you the woman, her family, her business, they show you a photograph of her, a little life story, you know, what she's going to do with the money. They can tell you all this information, but if they can't tell you the interest rate, this should really ring an alarm bell. When you're investing in a microfinance investment fund, who has that fund actually invested in? Because as bizarre as it might sound, often these microfinance funds act completely beyond the reach of any formal regulator, and often they won't even publish the investments that they've made. So really, you have no idea when you put your money into one of these funds really what is happening to it. And I think the only thing to do is just demand to the fund, if you want my money, I want to know who you're investing in, what you're doing to protect the interests of the clients, what interest rates they're charging. And if the fund is not able to give you a sensible answer that is credible, then I would suggest considering a different fund.
Hugh Sinclair is a consultant working in microfinance strategy and portfolio management and author of Confessions of a Microfinance Heretic, How Microlending Lost Its Way and Betrayed the Poor.